If your passion lies in elite British road racing and you want an inside line on the teams, riders, organisers and sponsors that make this sport such a compelling spectacle, you're in the right place. I'm Timothy John, and joining me for every episode is my co-host, the Managing Director of Brother UK, Bill Jones.
Thanks, Tim. It's great to be here. We're going to use this platform to talk about all the key issues surrounding the sport. With special guests, deep dives into hot topics and plenty of chat, we'll keep you informed about all things UK racing. Stay tuned.
Hello and welcome to this special edition of the Brother UK Cycling Podcast, where today we are joined by a very special guest in the form of Lizzie Deignan, a former world champion, an Olympic silver medalist, four times the British Road Race champion, a winner of three Monument Classics. I mean, we're just getting started here. Lizzie, two editions of the Brother UK sponsored women's tour, three victories at the GP Bleuet, two at Trofeo Binder, etc. Thank you very much indeed for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
The last time we met was at the Reina dinner. Did you have a good evening? You were, of course, the star guest.
Yeah, I did. It was really nice. It's been a few years since I've been able to have the time to get to the dinner. And we're living back in the UK now. So there was no excuse. I had to be there and show my face and support the fund. They've done a lot of good in cycling over the years. So I was pleased to be there.
You sort of go some distance back with Tim and Joss as well. I think you've been one of the many British cyclists to have stayed out at the house in Belgium.
Yeah, I'm lucky enough to be on that list. Yeah, I mean, they both really helped me out when I was turning professional. I moved to Belgium when I was trying to make it on the road. And them and their connections and literally just the location of their house is the best place you can go to, I think, if you're trying to turn professional, particularly as a woman, because there's so many races out there. So yeah, it really suited me.
And in terms of the Reina dinner and the sort of old school club dinner, which I know is sort of Joss's ambition that it would have that atmosphere, was that sort of part of your education, so to speak, or did you bypass the club scene? You were a sort of performance cyclist almost from day one.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I was picked up by the talent team to be a track rider. So the talent team, probably I should explain, is an initiative set up by British Cycling to identify talent in schools. And luckily enough, they came to my school, picked me up from the school playing field, basically identified me as somebody who had a bit of talent. And I went straight into kind of, the track program, which is very much about churning out medals on the track. And I stayed part of that system for quite a while, but really my heart lay on the road. So when I decided to move away from track cycling, my education as such was moving to Belgium and being surrounded by people like Tim and Joss, who were supporting Dave Reina funded athletes. I was lottery funded, so I didn't need the extra support of Dave Reina funding, but I was definitely in and around the environment with other Reina funded riders.
It's an incredible story, and sort of one of the themes I'd like to pick up on later is this explosion, A, in women's cycling as a professional sport, but particularly in the UK, where the domestic scene is absolutely on fire at the moment. And it would be interesting to know, whether that would have helped you, had there been a thriving domestic scene during that part of your career, or did the BC experience, the track experience, the Belgium experience, did that really unlock the rider that you've become today?
I mean, there was the national series, there was the national criterium series in the UK. They were great race series, but I definitely needed extra support in being able to get around the country, when you don't have your driving license at that age and you don't come from a cycling family who are not dedicating their whole weekends to driving you around the country, it can become quite difficult. So I think I really relied on the system that I was in to get to a good level at cycling. So if there are more local races, if there are more races, then by nature, there'd be more local races to different people. So I think it's great, that the scene is developing and participation, particularly in the UK, is transformed. Like when I first started riding, I would see a handful of people on their bikes. I mean, Yorkshire's always had a good cycling scene, but now, it's exploded. I can't go on a training ride, even in bad weather, without seeing a lot of groups of riders and also a lot of women, which is really positive. It's just about, you know, what I would be passionate about is making sure that those women are also kind of exposed to racing and the opportunities to race, because we have so many people participating, but I still think we need more numbers racing.
Here we are, Lizzie, in the week before Christmas, and you're still hard at work. So can you give us an idea of where you are now and what's on your immediate horizon?
So I'm in Calpe with Lidl Trek. We're just on our December training camp. So it's about 12 days long. At the start of the camp, we do a couple of days, a kind of sponsor and media related. And then we kind of get stuck into two blocks of training. So we do 3 day blocks and a rest day, which falls today. And then I'll do another 3 day block, and then I'll go home and rest up at Christmas before coming back again in January.
Is it a chore, or has this year seemed a little bit different? You've been doing your training on the roads of Yorkshire in the terrible UK climate. Has it been a relief to be out there in the Spanish sunshine this year?
I would definitely say I've looked forward to this training camp more than I have done previously, because I lived in a good climate before. So actually going to training camp, I'd lose training because you lose a couple of days with travel and things like that. So it was a bit of an inconvenience before, but whereas now I kind of try to make the most out of it, do the extra volume and things like that. So yeah, I'm enjoying definitely seeing the blue skies.
And is it just the weather, or is it a chance to actually ride with other professionals? Of course, you'd have been tripping over other pro cyclists in Monaco. Is it nice to be back among the group?
Really nice, yeah. I think you can train as hard as you want to at home, but you can't replicate what it feels like to be in a professional group, because you get comfortable without trying at home. You ride in your own rhythm, you push on certain climbs, you back off on certain climbs or descents or whatever. So it's just the change in rhythm and stimulus is really good for your body. And I mean, we're so well looked after here. It really is luxury. You know, we have a chef, we have masseuses, we have osteopaths, mechanics. So it's a very nice couple of weeks.
And more generally, how is the return to Yorkshire working out? What was your motivation to get a better work-life balance, or to get some space for the kids? What brought you home again?
Initially, it was... my husband was diagnosed with a form of arthritis, and we just struggled to get the kind of right healthcare in France and get good consultants and things like that. And we just felt really kind of the safety of being in the UK, being able to speak our own language and being surrounded by more family. And he's now started a treatment program, which has really helped him. My daughter started primary school. She's in an English speaking primary school, I suppose. Something always draws you back. You know, there was always the consideration, would we live in France long term? But there's something about being at home that feels like a blanket. I don't know. It's really nice. We're really, really enjoying it. We lived in an apartment before, and now we have a house. So everyone has their own bedroom and a garden. And yeah, we're just really enjoying the space and being back around family and friends.
And have you sort of regained any sort of sense of normality, Lizzie, or did the super rigorous demands of being a professional athlete sort of preclude the school run and the grocery shop and things like that?
No. I suppose more and more cycling feels like a job, but not in a negative way. I think, you know, we were in Monaco for a period of time because when Philip was a professional, it made sense. When I am a professional, it made sense, but it was also very focused on what was best for me. And it feels nice now that we're doing what's best for the family rather than just me. I like that the pressure is off my shoulders in terms of, you know, the sacrifices of being in a small place and living far away from home. That's not on my shoulders anymore. We're at home when we're doing what's right for the family, and I'm making cycling work. And, you know, I can't complain. There are worse places to be than Yorkshire.
I read an interview with you a couple of years ago now, I think, where you said you know you're very good at compartmentalizing. When you're at work, you're at work. You know your job is difficult and dangerous, but you're able to get in the zone and block out any distractions. Is that still the case? Do you still need to do that now you're back in Yorkshire, or is it a more sort of balanced existence?
I would say training-wise, it's a little bit more balanced. You know, things like the school run. You know, I do the school run in the morning. I'm not, you know, totally, you know, tunnel vision in the morning. There is space to be able to be a mum in the morning before then going out on the bike. And but when it comes to racing, I'm very focused and able to, you know, switch off any thoughts about being at home or whatever. I'd say training camp is probably the weird one, because on a rest day, I'm really bored and feeling quite guilty that I'm not able to do anything at home. When I'm at a race, it makes sense. But yeah, training camps can be a bit hard sometimes.
Of course, you have two children now, and you were away for a sort of similar period, I think, on both occasions. Has it been harder to come back this second time in terms of the strength and depth of the women's peloton?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah. It's hard to be objective because the pregnancy with Shay was much harder as well, and I lost a lot more fitness. So it's hard to really, say. But yeah, also the race program has changed quite a lot. So, you know, this year was my first Tour de France, and obviously the level increases at the Tour de France anyway. I think, you know, everyone brings their A game, a bit like an Olympic year. You felt that the at the Tour de France, everyone was on top of it. So there's a lot of change at the moment in the women's peloton. It's not just the strength and depth. It's the depth of the calendar as well that you have to get used to, the extra race days and things like that. So it's evolving really fast.
Yeah, absolutely. And this year, or the coming year, I should say, of all years, where you'll be riding three Grand Tours, a world championship, and hopefully an Olympic Games too. I mean, that is a really full program, isn't it? Plus the spring classics. Tell me how you're looking forward to 24.
Yeah, when you say it like that, yeah, it's quite a lot. I suppose you don't think of it like that as an athlete. You think about each goal separately. And yeah, I think to be able to peak three times is a huge challenge, but I think it has been done and it can be done. Obviously, I need to be able to peak in the spring to gain selection for the Olympics, which is a huge goal of mine. But it falls at the same time as the Tour de France. So whether I'm selected for the Olympic Games or not, I still want to be in the best shape I've ever been because of the Tour de France. So that's a useful coincidence.
Do the Olympics feel a little bit like unfinished business? I think you were going to retire after 2020 initially, weren't you? And here you are very much in the running for 24.
Yeah, I mean, I think if anything, the fact that, you know, 2020 Olympic Games was postponed because of the pandemic, you know, then I raced on till 21. Then we decided to try and have another baby and make another comeback. I kind of have given up on thinking too far ahead. I never expected that I'd be in Paris, but you know, if I am, then that's a bonus, and I'm grateful for the opportunity. I think every year is a bonus.
And have you had a chance even to consider the course in Paris? 158k, 1700 meters of climbing, short 1k climb of 6.5% on each lap. It sounds like a course that would suit you.
Yeah, I really like the course. Yeah. I think that's also why I'm motivated. You know, I'd like to think that I'm realistic and pragmatic about being a leader or a team player or whatever, but I think I would, in my best shape, deserve leadership on that course and selection for that course. I think it really does suit me.
Leadership, I know, is something that you're keen to get back to in the day job as well. 2023 was a sort of slightly different approach, wasn't it? You were sort of super domestique stroke road captain. How did that suit you? Was that something that you were able to gain any satisfaction from, or having achieved so much, is it really sort of leadership or bust at this stage of your career?
Oh, no, definitely not. No, I don't have an ego. I don't have a problem, you know, taking on that role. I really like that role. I think it'd be a waste of my experience if I didn't do that. There's not, you know, some people need to retire on top. It's not that I feel like that, and not that I feel like I'm close to retirement either, or that I'm accepting of that role. But I think, yeah, I gain a lot of kind of satisfaction out of that role as well, probably more. It's really, yeah, it's empowering when you can, you know, uplift the people around you and make people believe in themselves more than they do. I really like that.
This sort of ever-increasing youthful peloton, if that's the right phrase. It's on fast forward in the men's peloton, and it's happening too in the women's, isn't it? There are 5 18-year-olds on your team this year, including one, Izzy Sharp, who's come from a Brother UK-sponsored team. How do you react to that? Does it seem shocking that there are all these very young riders around? Or as you say, is it a chance to inspire?
I think it's brilliant, yeah. I think what a time to be a young female athlete. I mean, the opportunities that they have are brilliant. And I think Izzy's great. I think she's, you know, she's come on board. She's taken everything in. She hasn't got any kind of preconceptions of what to expect. She's very open-minded. She's obviously very talented and strong. And yeah, I'm looking forward to working with her and the other athletes. I think they've all got a great attitude. And I think it brings a bit more balance to the team as well when you have, you know, different age groups. And, you know, it's effectively a development team within a pro team, I would say.
I mean, I guess that fits into this sort of broader spectrum of the development of women's cycling. We touched on this actually at the Reina Foundation dinner, and it'd be very interesting to get your thoughts on record whether you think that parity has now been achieved. Certainly looking at a squad like Lidl-Trek, it does look like everybody's getting the same attention, the same opportunity.
Absolutely. At Lidl-Trek, they're showing the way, but there are things that, you know, Lidl-Trek are still having to make up for the shortcomings of other organisations. So, I mean, Lidl-Trek don't really shout about it, but they give us all a bonus on the women's team of prize money to match the men's team. So say a classic doesn't have the same parity in prize money, Trek makes up the difference to the equivalent that the men receive. So they are doing things behind the scenes that they shouldn't have to. So no, parity hasn't been achieved yet.
Given the sort of spectrum of your career, Lizzie, reading through your book a couple of weeks ago before we met up at the Reina Foundation dinner, and you had an experience at Garmin-Sovelo, I think, which was about as far removed from the approach of Lidl-Trek as can be imagined. The men's and women's teams were separate. The women's teams seemed to be an afterthought. And yet when one looks at the women's peloton today, you know, big teams like Jumbo-Visma, Movistar, they look like identical squads these days. Is there still work to be done? Does that sort of experience that you had back in 2011 seem like a lifetime ago? Or is there still ground to make up here?
No, very much so. I definitely feel that I have a quality at Lidl-Trek compared to my male teammates. You know, that's why I've stayed. That's why I've re-signed. You know, I'm definitely a proud Trek ambassador. And I think the fact that they've supported me through 2 maternity leaves as well shows that they respect me and they respect women's peloton and what we're capable of. And it's not about being grateful or anything like that. It's just how it is. Yeah. There's an expectation of parity. It's not something that I'm expected to be grateful for.
Yeah. I mean, you wonder how it was ever different or why it would ever have been different. How far ahead of the game was Cervelo Test Team?
Cervelo Test Team was definitely before its time. Yeah, I had a great experience there. And yeah, it's a shame that it took, you know, a couple of more years before you know, other people followed suit, but they certainly paved the way in terms of what a professional men's and women's team could coexist like.
Do you think that parity in some ways is being encouraged by the brands? I mean, it's hard to imagine corporations like Lidl or Trek as corporate entities treating its female employees differently from its male employees. Is that part of the mix here?
Yeah, I think it's about recognising that your customers, you know, you have a 50% customer rate of women, and at the moment, the more bikes are being sold to men. And to make it 50-50, you don't lose male customers, you just bring in more female customers, right? So there's a massive market and an opportunity there. And like you say, it's about in other walks of life, in other employment sectors, it's completely normal to expect equality. So yeah, I think also the fact that we have things like social media, inequality is so much quicker called out and exposed than it ever used to be. And I think that has been a good thing in kind of our fight for equality as well.
You know, we're talking about these big teams with big corporate backers, and yet SD Works, a team, of course, that you know very well, still an independent team and still the strongest team. Is there still a place in the women's peloton for independent teams, or do you think these sort of big world tour setups where there is a male squad and a female squad, is that now the established pattern?
Well, I think you have to look then at the male side. There are still a lot of established male teams who are missing a female team, if you see what I mean. So yeah, it does work. It's proven on both sides that it works, but whether those teams are missing a trick is up to them to decide, I suppose. Maybe SD Works need a men's team.
Well, yeah, gosh, if it's anything like as successful as its women's team, it would be a formidable outfit. I mean, I guess Ineos Grenadiers is the sort of elephant in the room here. They have a single female athlete in Pauline Ferrand-Prévot. I remember you sort of, again, reading your book, you mentioned had they set up a women's team post-2012 to accommodate you, it would have almost felt like they were coerced to do so. Now they seem like the odd one out. Is it time, do you think, that they join the party?
I would say, you know, I've been asked this question, I would say, for the last 15 years. And the opportunity to ride or race for them has never materialised in 15 years. So it's a question that they need to answer, not me, if you know what I mean.
We touched earlier on the level in professional cycling and you know, I mentioned, was it harder to come back this from the second pregnancy just because of the rise, or what seems like a rise in quality? And yet, when we look back at the 2015, 2016, you know, era, a lot of the riders like yourself, like Elisa, absolutely at the top of your game, were there then. The field had real strength and depth almost 10 years ago. What's your take on that, Lizzie? Is it getting stronger year by year, or has the women's peloton been at a very high level for some time now?
I would say it's a mix. I mean, if I look at, you know, inspirational athletes from when I first started, people like Judith Arndt or Emma Pooley or Ina Tuttenberg, you know, who were winning everything. Do I think those athletes would be capable in modern cycling of winning everything? Yes, absolutely. Things have changed around the sport, but I think the exceptional athletes of the past would still be the exceptional athletes now, because, you know, training methods have adapted, professionalism has adapted. The difference now is really the strength in depth. If I attacked 5 years ago, or, you know, maybe longer, when I won the world title, for instance, if I attacked, you know, and did 550 watts for a minute, there would be five women who could follow me. Now there are 15, and therefore 15 women on a road, it makes the group come back together. So the racing is harder than it ever has been before, just because of that. The nature of the racing has changed. The attacks are not as destructive as they used to be because there's more people able to follow. So the dynamics of the racing have changed. But yeah, I still think, yeah, I mean, the best athletes would still be the best athletes today, I think.
Tell me about the sort of big changes in women's professional cycling, the Tour de France femme avec Swift, the formation of a UCI Women's World Tour. Has the development of women's cycling been incremental, or has it been those big step changes that have really made the difference?
It's been a mix, yeah. It's chicken and egg situation, you know. You do, what comes first, the media coverage or the minimum wage or all these things? And, you know, I am grateful to those people behind the scenes, people like the Cyclists Alliance, who have really pushed kind of the infrastructure stuff behind the scenes that often as an athlete you're not really thinking about. And yeah, things like the Tour de France Femme have been huge because, you know, they're a headline maker and that's important. Societal change, you know, the like I said, social media not accepting inequalities anymore, being able to call things out more. I think it's important that there is sustainable change, and it's not always easy to express that because often we're asked for kind of a tagline or a headline, or that is pulled from an interview. So things like the Tour de France Femme is only 8 days long. And of course, that is not the objective. We do want to have a 3-week grand tour, but I think it's important to recognise that at the moment, our calendar is exploding. We have so many races. And until the minimum wage has been in place for 5 years or longer, you know, until the next generation of women have come through on a minimum wage with an ability to train as a professional athlete, you are not going to be able to have a peloton that can sustain the calendar that we have and a 3-week Tour de France. It's not about physical ability. That's obvious. I mean, any athlete on the Women's World Tour could compete in a 3-week Tour de France. It's about making sure, like I say, that the infrastructure is there and that everything is a sustainable change, because the last thing we want is to grow too quickly and then blow up.
The transformation is almost hard to keep up with, and nowhere more than at home. In British Cycling, Brother sponsors two domestic women's teams, has done for some time now. There are rumoured to be as many as 7 UCI Continental teams registered in the UK next year, which is absolutely extraordinary. Do you get a chance to follow the UK scene, or is that sort of some way off in the distance?
I suppose I will do more now that I'm in the UK. I was chatting to Izzy a little bit earlier about whether I knew any of the juniors that were coming through in the races. And honestly, I don't at the moment. I mean, I've just, you know, been concentrating on myself and my team. But I would hope to in the future definitely be closer to that, because, you know, women's cycling and developing women's cycling in the UK is something I'm definitely passionate about and want to be involved in.
I mean, I was speaking to some of the young riders at the Reina Foundation dinner who were pretty awestruck that you were there. And I wondered if you had any sense of legacy. I mean, they were, a lot of them sort of named you, you know, directly and said, well, you know, I'm riding a bike because, you know, I grew up watching Lizzie Armistead. Is that something that sort of enters your bubble?
Slowly it does, yeah, because there are a generation now that were watching television when I won that London 2012 medal, and they remember it, and, you know, they were only kids then. So, yeah, it's quite surreal to think that I inspired them as kids to get on the bike. And I suppose, yeah, that's only going to happen more and more as the years tick by, isn't it?
And what about the British riders that you see on a day-to-day basis? Pfeiffer, Georgie, Anna Henderson, Abby Smith, you know, riders of that quality. What do they impress you? How do you respond to that?
Yeah, they really impress me. I mean, I think we had a real opportunity at the World Championships, had luck gone a little bit more in our favour. Pfeiffer, unfortunately, had a bad day. Anna crashed out, having just got fourth in the time trial. And I think, had things gone a little bit differently, you would have had 3 GB riders in the real final of a World Championship there. And it's been a few years since that has happened, since it was kind of me, Emma Pooley and Nicole Cook. So to know that there is this kind of next generation of women knocking on the door is really exciting to be a part of it, yeah.
I mean, that World Championship road race was unbelievable, probably the race of the season, I would suggest. Just how hard was it from the inside? This crazy course that was sort of derided beforehand, but afterwards everybody was saying, that's the best World Championships in years. How was it for you?
I loved it. Yeah, I loved everything about it. I mean, it was as close to a home World Championships as I'm ever going to get after Harrogate World Championships. I just loved the course. It really suited me. Tactics played a huge part in the race, and those kind of races are usually what suit me.
Did it sort of push you to a higher level, Lizzie? Probably your best performance of this season?
Yes, definitely, yeah. I usually perform well under pressure, and yeah, I just loved the course. I loved the fact that my family were there. I really felt good that day.
Tell me about the sort of spectrum of your career. I mean, it's unimaginable if you sort of consider it only on paper. 2009 Track World Championship, Paris-Roubaix winner, 2021. It's a huge amount of time, and it covers an exponential growth in your sport? Does it sometimes even amaze you, just the sheer spectrum of your career?
Yes, very much so, yeah. It's quite surreal, really, when I think about my achievements, but also, yeah, like you say, the kind of diverse achievements starting on the track and then being where I am now. I still have to pinch myself that, you know, I'm still able to be a professional athlete however many years later. I think I was counting my seasons the other day and it's my 17th season next year, which sounds really surreal. But that's what happens. Life kind of happens to you in the blink of an eye. And yeah, it's really surreal, but I'm sure it's like that for lots of people in lots of different careers. But I just feel very grateful to the talent team for coming to my school that day. It really was kind of a crossroads moment in my life. And I owe so much to the people who introduced me to cycling, because my life would have looked very different without them.
You mentioned the diversity of your achievements. Has that in some ways been, trying to find the right way to phrase this, but I mean, because you've grown up or you've developed as an athlete, your career has progressed through this period of exponential change within the women's sport. Has the two things gone hand in hand? Would you have had fewer opportunities, for example, in the male peloton where things are a little more rigid, a little more routine?
I don't think so. I mean, if I look at people who are similar age to me, who I, you know, I went to track championships with when I was younger, people like Geraint Thomas, you know, Ian Stannard, people like that, Luke Rowe, you know, they all started on the track in a system similar to me and have gone on to do similar things. So, no, I don't think so.
Would you expect another rider to experience the same breadth of achievement, or has a template now been established within the women's peloton? Again, probably not a particularly well-phrased question, but for example, you know, in the men's peloton, it's now very cut and dried. Riders go to altitude training camps, they race. It's decided fairly early on whether they're a classics rider, a grand tour rider, etc., etc., and it's all quite homogenized. The women's peloton seems to be a greater freedom. I don't know if that's an incorrect perception.
No, that's the case. But I think if you look at the history of men's cycling, you would also see that it's developed into the sport it is now. You know, however many years ago, Sean Yates, Eddie Merckx, they could do it all. But then actually, so can Pogacar, you know, like he can do it all. So there are still exceptional athletes who can do it all. I think you are definitely more free in women's cycling because of, like I talked about, we don't have, I mean, a 3-week Grand Tour rider is very different to somebody who can win a week long stage race. There are men who can win Paris-Nice but cannot win the Tour de France. So, you know, we're our opportunities, things like, you know, Gaia Realini on our team, she is just an absolute phenomenal climber. She hasn't had that many summit finishes yet to showcase what she is. If she was a man with the same ability she had, she would absolutely be pigeonholed as a climber. And, you know, that will come in women's cycling. Not yet, but in the future, I see that the sport will go the same direction. Yeah.
Looking ahead to 2024, Lidl Trek's Classic squad is arguably the strongest in the sport. Would you hope to ride Paris-Roubaix again?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I really want to go back there.
The victory in 2021, I mean, absolutely extraordinary. What's your reflections on that particular win?
It was just a surreal experience, really, to it as, you know, hoping to be a supportive rider, never expected to come away with the win, never expected the win to kind of blow up in the way it did. Like I've said in, you know, previous interviews, it's difficult to describe to people and explain the fact that the change in my career, people are able to watch my victories now. And, you know, 5-6 years ago when I was winning big races like Drenthe, the World Cup, for instance, I won that in pretty emphatic style and did a great job, but it was a tweet on, you know, or a result on cycling news. It wasn't something that people could watch live and engage with. So Roubaix was special because people were able to watch me, you know, going away solo and winning it. So things like that are also changing the way people see my wins. And yeah, I could feel that it reached so many more people than another win had ever done before.
I heard a podcast recently, Lizzie, with Damon Hill, the Formula One driver, who won in Suzuka in 1994 in the most appalling conditions, under huge pressure. He had to win that day to keep the championship alive and carry the fight to Michael Schumacher in the final round of the season. And he produced the best drive of his career by miles. It was an extraordinary performance. And he said, I was so far over the limit that day. He'd never come anywhere close again. Consciously, he pushed himself into a completely different space and produced the performance of his career. And I was thinking of your win at Roubaix, you know, where you were absolutely on the ragged edge for however many kilometres. Does that seem like a fair comparison? Could you go there again?
Yeah, I mean, physically and mentally, it was unlike any challenge I've faced before because of the conditions, because of the cobbles. But it wasn't an Olympic Games. It was a new race. It wasn't a World Championships. So I really did go into that race with a different sense of calm. It wasn't that I pulled off the performance of my life in the most pressurized environment. I really was there in my mind to try and help Ellen van Dijk win the race. So actually, it was not a conscious, like, overcoming of stress or whatever. I was just really reactive that day and everything just flowed. So I would say of all the days on the bike I've had, you're searching for a flow. I found the flow that day. But in terms of physical exertion and depths of suffering, I mean, Roubaix wasn't the hardest race I've ever done.
Fascinating insight. Do you have a favourite season, Lizzie? I mean, you've got a few to choose from here. 2015 World Champion, World Cup winner. 2016 Flanders, Strade Bianche and Nieuwsblad. 2020 La Course and Liège-Bastogne-Liège. 2021 Tour de Suisse, Paris-Roubaix. I mean, my goodness. Was there a particular season where you felt everything's come together this year?
I'd say probably my first season with Trek, 2019. Because I'd made the comeback from having my daughter Orla. I didn't know what to expect. And I was in a new team, and that's always a risk. And I just felt instantly that I had made a really, really good decision by coming to the team. And just the physical challenge of coming back from a pregnancy and also becoming a new mum with no idea what I was doing. And just, yeah, the fact that I was able to pull it off, I surprised myself and other people, I guess.
How do you sort of retain your motivation now, having achieved so much with two small children, with your husband, and yet here you are at a training camp in the depths of winter, getting ready to go again? Where does that motivation come from?
A very different place to when I first started. My motivation when I was younger was absolutely just about dreaming of being world champion, of being able to wear the rainbow jersey. But now my motivation comes from a sense of perspective that I am incredibly lucky to do this for a living, that I get to support my family by being a professional athlete. You know, I'm surrounded by people who are on the limit of, you know, maintaining a healthy work-life balance. It's not easy. You know, I realize that the grass isn't greener, and I'm incredibly privileged to do the job I do. So I want to make the best of it and make every ride count, because I am sacrificing time with my family and I am pushing me and my husband to our limits of what balance looks like for a family. So I want to make it count, and that's my motivation.
And finally, Lizzie, how's Christmas looking? When do you finally get a chance to put your feet up?
I go home on the 22nd. So really just in time for Christmas. But I'm really looking forward to it this year. My daughter's 5, so she really believes in Santa. So I'm looking forward to, you know, doing that whole show. And I mean, obviously Santa's real, in case any children are listening. And yeah, just spending time with my family. You know, normally Christmas is a very hectic time of year for us because we're traveling between England and Ireland and trying to fit lots of things into a short space of time. So I'm quite looking forward to not having to go through the hustle and bustle of an airport with young children and just try and enjoy it.
Well, a very, very Christmas, and thank you very much for joining us today. Much appreciated.
Cheers. Thank you.
If you've enjoyed today's episode, please hit subscribe.